You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Schools around the state and around the country are continuing to grapple with the question of whether and how to stay open for in-person instruction as the pandemic keeps continuing. Some states, like Kentucky, have gone into statewide closures more recently, while in Wisconsin, there's a patchwork of open schools, closed schools, some in between. Aaron Richards has been following this developing story. Aaron's a national education reporter for USA Today, based in Milwaukee. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you.
I mentioned Kentucky there. Where are we seeing some of the most stringent school closing measures, in-person schooling measures taking place around the country right now?
Right. We've got a variety of states that have mandated closures. Kentucky is the biggest one in terms of a statewide closure. But we've seen other large districts that have either reverted to all at-home learning again. New York City, the largest school district in the country, was trying to get some kids back into school. That happened for a few weeks for some students. And then they went all virtual again, and then received a lot of criticism for that. They're once again trying to bring back some younger students. It's been a lot of back and forth and a lot of debate over whether a threshold of 3% positive cases of the virus is the right threshold to have kids in schools. And across the country, you've got about 30% of U.S. students who've never had the chance to be in classrooms this year because so many districts have started the year virtually. And even if they were considering trying to get kids back in classes before the holidays, if they haven't done it before now, it's very unlikely that they'll get any kids in classrooms before the end of the year.
At the center of a piece you wrote about this, Aaron, is the concept that we're in this patchwork here. States haven't necessarily gotten real strict guidelines from the federal government, counties from states, locals from counties. And so it's this mix and match approach we've got going on. How did we end up here?
Well, it's been a lot of passing the buck down the line, and a joke in the circles of people like me that write about schools and education is that it would be really tough to be a school superintendent right now. You're getting conflicting messages from both the health department, the federal government, not a whole lot of help from the state. And so this is also difficult in America because there's such a tradition here of local control. A lot of decisions about schools are made by your own local community, your elected school board. But your elected school board may not be as well trained in epidemiology as the local health department. And yet there's some skepticism about the messaging from health departments as well. And of course, all of this is tied up in politics, people's feelings about what's best for kids aside from politics. We all know that in a perfect world, most kids would be in school, seeing their teachers every day, getting that academic and social support. And even among parents, there's some debate about, there's some national polls recently that have shown that a lot of Black and Latino parents wouldn't send their kids to school even if they opened tomorrow because they're really worried about the spread of the virus in their own communities. They're concerned about safety. And there's a growing number of voices from those communities that are saying, look, use this opportunity to make virtual learning a whole lot better because it's where we want our kids right now because that's where we feel safest.
What have we heard from the federal government when it comes to encouragement to stay open or suggested guidelines or anything?
Right. Not a whole lot recently. And that's, of course, because there's a transition of power happening in the federal government. Of course, over the summer, President Trump came out very strongly for reopening schools. A few months down the line, I think a lot of people, even people that don't agree with him politically, actually kind of agree now that maybe that was the right move. But it was so politically charged at the time that I think a lot of people that might have come around to, hey, let's get kids back in school safely and let's talk about how to do that, sort of recoiled from the mandate. Even Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education, doesn't usually, her philosophy is to not, really tell localities what to do. She really supports local control, but you even saw her come out and say, get kids back in buildings. So that was the messaging over the summer. It has gotten a little muddy since then. And honestly, it's really come down to local health departments and even individual schools. I mean, in Milwaukee, where they're, the Milwaukee public schools have been virtual all from the start. There were about 30% of the private voucher schools in Milwaukee, or private schools that also accept kids on vouchers. Those schools, many of them did open for in-person instruction. And now some of them have made the individual choice to close because they're worried about the spread of the virus in the community. And those are very, I mean, talk about local. Those are just an individual school principal or, you know, superintendent of a private school determining that that's the best move for their community. So very much these have been very locally led decisions. And except for a couple of these, both in Dane County and Racine County, there's some conflict right now between the health departments, saying that all schools need to close, both public and private, and the private school communities and an outfit in Milwaukee that supports, you know, religious freedom and the rights of individuals are now, you know, have a lawsuit pending on that because they don't believe that the health department has the power to tell private schools to shut down.
Talking to Aaron Richards, national education reporter for USA Today, based in Milwaukee, looking at the decisions, the tough decisions about whether to keep schools open or reopen them for in-person education during the pandemic. Aaron, at the heart of this is the question of, okay, how safe is it for students to be in schools? What's the state of the art? What do we know about that?
Well, we do have some data from both Anthony Fauci and from the World Health Organization. Some of those have suggested that if you're the spread of the virus, if there's more than 10% positive cases in the community, you should really think about reverting to virtual learning. However, many states have had a far higher spread of the virus than that and have still had schools open. So that's not a hard and fast rule, but it is a recommendation. Certainly at the 5% positive threshold or under, there's pretty widespread agreement that it's fairly safe to keep schools open. There are, of course, some schools that are still offering in-person instruction and have been fairly successful at it, especially among younger kids. I do think there is a trend across the country now of some schools saying, look, you know, we don't feel like we can safely bring back our older students because we know that older students are more likely to spread the virus than younger students. And so we're seeing more schools target those young learners and also learners with disabilities that have a really hard time learning from home, trying to get them back in school. But other than those guidelines from, you know, both the CDC and the World Health Organization, you know, those really are just guidelines at the moment. Lots of states and districts are taking their own, kind of charting their own path on this.
One debate we've seen, I think since spring with all of this, is the question of schools as a priority. We've seen some countries in Europe, and I think some communities in the U.S. say, we're going to do everything we can to keep schools open, but we're going to balance that out to try to stop community spread by doing things like really being strict about, you know, bars and restaurants and other inside gatherings. Is that still a big debate as you see it, Aaron, here in the U.S.?
I think it is a big debate, and you certainly see people saying, I mean, look, I mean, even London shut down its pubs in an effort to keep its schools open. So if you want to try to, you know, prioritize this, let's try to prioritize getting kids in school. That just hasn't been the approach that we've taken here. And I think what's unnerving for a lot of people is that it's such a fluid situation with the virus cases increasing that nobody really knows how, you know, how far are we going to let it go before we take a different path. Certainly that has been a big debate in New York City with the schools being shut down a second time. And a lot of people saying, wait a minute, if you have the power to shut down the schools, why don't you shut down the pubs first? And I think, you know, some of that criticism is what has led the city to start to say, okay, well, let's try to get a few of these younger kids and kids with disabilities back to class. So it's complicated because it's such a fluid situation. It's overlaid with politics, and there's just not a lot of hard and fast guidance from above. And sometimes when there is that guidance, people rebel against it. So it's just a very messy situation right now.
There are the health concerns on the one hand and the community spread concerns. On the other hand, there's the question about, hey, is all virtual education, you know, bad for kids? Is it hurting their performance? I assume, Aaron, people are going to be crunching numbers on this for years, if not decades. What kind of signs do we have so far?
We have some indication that kids have lost some ground since the school closures in March up until now. The latest report that came out today has said that of about, you know, 8,000 school kids in about 8,000 schools whose, you know, test scores could be compared from this fall in reading and math to last fall, that reading more or less hasn't taken too big of a hit, but but that math performance has ticked down a bit. Now, there's a big caveat with this latest report, because the kids who were most likely to be tested were kids who were attending higher income schools that were more likely to be in person and that were more likely to have the resources to test kids, even if they were learning remotely. So many lower income schools that serve Black and Latino kids were just opted out of testing altogether. And that gives us a bit of an artificial look. On one hand, it's pretty good that maybe more of our middle class kids are, you know, haven't lost as much ground as we think, but it really doesn't tell us what's going on with the kids who were struggling quite a bit academically even before the pandemic. There are other reports from both teachers and parents around the country that point to the fact that parents don't think their kids are learning as much online as they were in person. A fairly large survey of teachers that just came out a few weeks ago said, you know, teachers who were teaching in person were reported they were making about, you know, twice as much progress as teachers who were teaching remotely, just based on the percentage of them that said that they'd gotten through all or most of the material that they would usually have taught up to this point in the year. So we certainly have some indications that, you know, remote learning may not be helping kids move along as much as we'd like to. And then we have to say, what are we going to do with that? Are we going to try to improve remote learning? Or are we going to just do the best we can, keep our heads above water, try to support our neighbors, and then address whatever learning loss has happened once we can get kids back in classrooms? And I think the problem with that is that some people are thinking that, you know, this might be a year where we don't get back to classrooms until next fall. And if that's the case, what can we do now to help kids learn if they can't be in classrooms full time like we'd like them to be?
Briefly, Aaron, as we wrap up, what do you have your eye on next?
Well, that was actually a great lead-in, because I'm working on a big story about the extent of learning loss, what we know so far, what kids are most affected by learning loss, and some solutions and some suggestions from around the country that are helping those kids get the resources they need if they can't be in classrooms with their teachers right now.
We'll keep an eye out for that, Aaron, and watch your email for a request from us. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. It's always good to be here.
Aaron Richards covers national education for USA Today. She's based in Milwaukee. We talked to her about challenges around closing schools and keeping them open during the ongoing pandemic.